At the end of Parashat Vayetze, Yaakov has finally succeeded in extricating himself from 20 years in the house of Lavan. And here he had been pursued by Lavan, and there on the mountains of Gilad, the two separate, and Yaakov begins his journey to Eretz Yisrael. And what do we have at the end of the Parashat Vayetze? A camp of angels are coming toward him, the angels of Eretz Yisrael that are going to welcome Yaakov to Eretz Yisrael. But here it very much is going to seem like the ongoing drama of Jewish history. One problem is over. He's escaped from the hands of a Lavan whom we described last week as one who wanted to destroy Yaakov utterly, and there he is, no rest for the righteous. The next day he is already being faced with the threat of Esav, and the threat of Esav is going to be really an eternal one. Isn't that what God told Rivka when the two, Yaakov and Esav, were in the womb, in her womb, that there's going to shnei goyim bivitneich, there are two nations that are there in your womb, and ulaom mil om yamatz, and there's going to be an eternal struggle between the two until ultimately the younger one is going to prevail. So here it is, the beginning of the struggles of Jewish history. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefanav, will read a number of psukim, and we're going to have to assess. The purpose of the shiur today is going to be to assess the way in which Yaakov deals with Esav, the way in which he meets up with him, how he relates to him. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefanav El Esav Achiv. Yaakov sent messengers before him to his brother Esav, Arts of Seir, to the land of Seir, Sedei Edom, the field of Edom. Vayitzav otam lechor. He sends messengers, and Rashi says that the malachim over here are not messengers of flesh and blood, but he sends angels. He already has an army of angels with him. Vayitzav otam lechor, and he commanded them, saying, Ko tomrun la'adoni le'esav, so shall you say to my master to Esav. Ko Omar Avdecha Yaakov, so says your servant Yaakov. Im Lavan Garti Va'echar Ad Ota, I lived with Lavan and I have tarried till now. In other words, I would have come back earlier, but for all sorts of reasons I couldn't come. Of course, the first thing that strikes us over here is it seems that Yaakov is being very obsequious. Malka is looking at me, and she wants to know, Maze obsequious? Eich amrim obsequious? How do you say obsequious b'ivrit? For that matter, how do you say obsequious in English? That's also a good nikasha. Hitrapsut. All right, now those of you who don't know what hitrapsut is, it's obsequious. Hitrapsut. Hitrapes means sort of to bend and bow and scrape and act in a very, in an obsequious fashion. If you want to use a nicer word, say that Yaakov is speaking with extreme humility before his brother Esav. And he thought, oh, so there's a question. Is he acting like a wimp, or is there meaning and substance and significance to this? The whole shiur is going to be, is he to be condemned for the way he acts in such an obsequious, now that you know what the word means, is he to be condemned for acting this way before his brother Esav? Is he to be understood? Is he to be commended for acting this way? But the fact is that here he refers to himself as your servant Yaakov, and he is sending his messengers to my master Esav. To my master Esav, can you imagine? And And what's the pasuk says? Let's go a little further. By Yehili Shor v'Chamor, I had oxen and donkeys, sown for Eved, sheep and servant, maid servants, v'shiflan, maid servants, v'eshlechol haGidla Adoni. And I'm sending to tell you, limtzochein beinecho, to find favor in your eyes. He's trying to find favor in the eyes of Esav. It's one of the things that, under certain circumstances, it can simply, depending on what your political or emotional orientation is, it can turn your stomach over. Before this Esav, he wants to find favor in the eyes of Esav. I ask you to find favor. At what price will he have to find favor in the eyes of Esav? Huh? Oh, so one may very well interpret this as some kind of a gullus mentality. There's only one problem. Anybody who's going to buy set one of my tapes on Bereshis is going to find out that there is a magnificent shiur over there in which I compare. Which I compared the Lavan Yaakov confrontation at the end of Parsha Vayetze, just a few psukim before, and the Yaakov Esav confrontation that we're going to read about now. In a moment, we're going to find out that Yaakov is going to put his family on a war footing, konanut, gius male, complete mobilization of all forces. If Esav is going to come to one camp and smite that camp, they will fight and the other will flee. We don't find Yaakov preparing for war against Lavan. He doesn't put his family on a war footing. He doesn't arm his entire camp. And there, I believe I proved in that year that the difference between Yaakov Lavan and Yaakov Esav is the fact that the Yaakov Lavan confrontation takes place in Chutz Laretz. And in the last pasuk, the last few psukim of Parshat Vayetze, Yaakov has crossed the border of Machanayim. He has crossed the border into Eretz Yisrael. The Jew in Eretz Yisrael is ready to fight if need be. The difference between the Yaakov Lavan confrontation at the end of Parshat Vayetze and the Yaakov Esav confrontation at the beginning of Vayishlach is the difference between Chanukah and Purim. Purim, there was no talk of Jews arming themselves to fight. At best, they were granted permission to defend themselves. Chanukah, Jews took up arms to fight. The difference is between the Jew in Eretz Israel and the Jew in Chutz Laretz. I also used as an example of that the same Avraham Avinu, who in Parshat Lech Lecha, he comes down to Mitzrayim. So before he comes to Mitzrayim, he begs his wife, listen, do me a favor, Sarah. Say that you are my sister. You got it, sister. Because if not, I'm frightened that they will kill me. He comes to Mitzrayim, and you know what really happens when he comes to Mitzrayim? He waits for the inevitable knock on the door. He's frightened. And yes, the knock on the door comes, and Sarah is taken to the house of Paro, and there is nothing that Avram can do. He is absolutely helpless. We forget about all that when one perek later, Avram rounds up his 318 men and goes out on the midnight ride of Avram Avinu, and he vanquishes the four superpowers of the day. Within a few pages, the same Avram, frightened and trembling before Paro, helpless, unable to do anything. And the same Avraham Avinu is the one who goes out over there, brings back Sodom and Amorah and Lot and all their wealth, and he crushes utterly the four superpowers of the day. So I said there also the difference is between Avraham in Mitzrayim is Avraham in Chutz Laretz. The Jew in Chutz Laretz can beg, besiege, whereas Avraham Avinu in Eretz Yisrael is a completely different Avraham Avinu. But this was really only partial attractions. Maybe now you might even be interested in buying that set of tapes. So therefore, I'm not ready to fully say that Yaakov here is a gullus mentality. However, we're going to see that there are Mepharshim who do say precisely that, not in so many words. That's really the shir. The shir is to assess what Yaakov Avinu is doing. Is he to be condemned or commended? And what we're really going to find, I'll tell you the whole shir in advance. We're going to find those who commend him and those who condemn him. And then, of course, we're going to be left with the great dilemma. What are we to do when we find ourselves in a similar situation? The Ramban will bring it. The Medrashim, the Gemara says that Gedolei Yisrael, the great people of Israel, before they would go to Rome or elsewhere to plead the case for the Jewish people, they would learn Parashat Vayishlach. Parashat Vayishlach was the parasha before he went any place. I would imagine that Netanyahu should learn it before he goes to see Albright. I think he should learn it with Albright. Learn Parashat Vayishlach. Chach Nachon, Chach Me Yisrael would learn Parashat Vayishlach. So then we're going to learn Parashat Vayishlach, and then we're going to have to see, well, what is it that we learn from it? So far at this point, what we find is Yaakov being obsequious. Vayashuvu Amalachim El Yaakov Lemor. And the angels returned to Yaakov so saying, Bonu Elachicha El Esav, we came to your brother to Esav, V'gam Holech Likrotchon, he's going toward you, V'arba Me'ot Ish Imo, and there are 400 men with him. Why don't the messengers or angels who have returned, do they have a message from Esav? Has Esav said anything? Has Esav told them, well, you tell my brother? I don't know. There could have been many messages that Esav could have sent. Don't shoot till you see the whites of their eyes. I don't know, give me liberty or give me death, or nuts to you. There are great messages that Esav could have sent to Yaakov, but we don't hear a word. Not a word. It may very well be that it's all summed up in the report that they bring. He's coming toward you, and 400 men armed to the teeth are coming with him. The response of Esav to Yaakov's obsequious message is, he's coming with 400 men. Now I'll tell you. You know, it's fascinating. I always have this feeling. Chazal said it. You can always find the events of the week reflected in Parashat HaShavua. Do you know what message is being given to Yaakov? That the Syrians are moving Division 14 from the Beirut area. Right? Mossad agent gives a report of that sort. Now the question is, will the Israeli army prime minister, are they going to act on the basis of this? Are they going to call up the reserves? Are they going to send their men out into battle? Or are they going to be very, very calm about it? You can't take every report that seriously. You have to be able to weigh and measure it. The fact is that Yaakov Avinu is brilliant. He hears the message that Syria is moving its divisions. He hears that Esav is coming toward him. And he has heavenly Yehuda gills that are giving him information. He has Malachim who are giving him information. And you know what? He doesn't even get so excited when Malachim give him information. And what is he going to do? Famous Rashi. Rashi says he's going to prepare himself l'doron, l'tfila, u'l'milchama. He's going to prepare himself first to send gifts to Esav, appeasement. He's going to pray, and only the very, very last option of all is going to be the option of war. which means that what Yaakov Avinu is going to do is he's going to filter the information that's given to him. He's going to filter it through his own mind, and he's not going to jump to any conclusions. He's not going to go out to open battle. Wait. He's going to be very calm. He's going to be very, very calm. The Malachim came, returned to Yaakov, saying, "We came to your brother Esav. He's coming toward you with 400 men with him." His response is, I would say, most Yaakov's response is most human. Yaakov was very frightened. Vayetzer lo, and he was distressed. And Rashi points out what's the difference between Vayira, he was frightened, and Vayetzer, he was distressed. Vayira, he was frightened lest he be killed in battle. Vayetzer lo, he was distressed because there may be the need to kill others. Others are going to die. According to some of the Mefarshim, what really distresses him is not if it is Esav who is enemy whom he will have to kill. But in the course of battle, there are always the possibilities of innocent civilians, bystanders that are going to be hurt or killed, and this distresses him. He divided the people that were with him, the sheep, the cattle, the camels, into two camps. And he said to himself, if Esav is going to come to one camp and he's going to smite the camp, the other camp is going to survive. They will flee. So here, what has he done? The first thing that he does, and this is very fascinating. Remember, I had quoted to you the Rashi, where Rashi says that he prepared himself in three ways, and Rashi makes it very clear he prepares himself l'doron, to send a gift, l'tfilah, for prayer, u'l'milchama, and for war. That's not the order in which they appear in the Torah. What's the order in which they appear in the Torah? The first one that he prepares himself is for war. He puts his family on a war footing, his whole camp. And second, he prays. Vayome Yaakov, Pasuk 10, Vayome Yaakov. Yaakov said, Elokei Avi Avram, the God of my father Avram, Elokei Avi Yitzchak, the God of my father Yitzchak. Hashem ho'emer elai, God who said to me, you yourself told me, when I was in the house of Lavan, you told me, Shuv li'artzicho ulam oladitecha, return to your land and to your birthplace, ve'eti vo'imach, and I will do good with you. So what's he so worried about? This is, of course, a problem that is dealt with by all the Mefarshim. Not only that, when he had the dream at the beginning of Parshas Vayetzeh, God promised him that he's going to bring him back in peace to the house of his father. So what's he afraid of? The man has a divine guarantee that Rabbeinu Shalom, where is Yaakov Avinu's bitachon? So in the next pasuk, we see that even the great are never absolutely so sure of themselves. Nobody should ever be sure of themselves. This overconfidence is, fortunately or unfortunately, it's the young that have overconfidence, and so certain about themselves. You get a little older, you get a little more mature, and you're not so certain anymore about anything. That can also be a shaking experience. But there's a tremendous amount of beauty in the idea of doubt. Don't be so sure about yourself. All right. Maybe we'll pick up this thread at a later point. Anyway, so Chazal say, the Medrash says that there are two people who are frightened. It says about Yaakov that he's frightened, and it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, Al tira, don't be afraid. What are they afraid of? So he says, Katonti mikol aksadim Rabbeinu Shalom, you've been so good to me. I tell you, I understand, Yaakov. I think that people get frightened or say there's an inner fear when you get ready to make a simcha. You get all uptight and worried. You think it's easy to make a simcha with simcha. You get worried, oh, the Rabbein Yishlel, like everything is going so well. There's that fear, God forbid, something may go wrong. Will everybody arrive safely? Will everybody get home safely? Will everybody be well? You have to pop volumes when you make a simcha. Yaakov Avinu, he takes a look around and he sees his wives, his children, his wealth, him is gesinnt, and everybody's well, and he's on his way home. He is so concerned that he may have used up his credit. He had zchuyot, in other words, he had a credit over there. And lefamim, we know what it means to go into likanes la'over. You go into over and overdraft, and you know you've used up your zchuyos. Like katonti mikol achsadim, I become small because of all of the kindness that you've done to me. It's something to be frightened of. It's something to be frightened. When we call Hamet and all the truth you promised and you have fulfilled. And he's concerned, Shemo Yigrom Hachet, maybe he did something wrong. Maybe he did something wrong. And this is going to be the moment at which he's going to be punished for what he may have done wrong. Katanti mikol hachasadim mikol haemet asher osita tavdecha, all that you've done for your servant. And he says it clearly. Take a look. Ki b'makli avarti at hayarden hazeh, 20 years ago, I crossed the Yarden, I crossed the Jordan on my way to Aram, to the house of Lavan. I crossed it with no more than a stick in hand. Va'ata hayisi l'shnei machanot, and now I'm two camps. You know, this is the great success story. I don't know, he was delivering newspapers as a kid, and now he owns the newspaper. He shined shoes, and now he owns Gali, I understand, and a whole conglomerate of companies. I mean, we're talking about a man who crossed the Jordan with nothing more than his stick in hand. He fled from the house of his parents. He had to flee, and now 20 years later, he's coming back, and he is a... there's a Klal Yisrael that is beginning to be formed before his very eyes, and he's the one that's he has a great deal to thank God for. He has a great deal to thank God, and he's frightened. Maybe he's used up some of his credit. Please save me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau. I don't know if this is on the tapes. I don't know if this can be a commercial. But the Mefarshim are concerned. Why does he say Hatzileni Na? Please save me, Miyad Achi, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esav. Now he only has one brother. If he would have said Hatzileni Na Miyad Achi, would have been enough. If he would have said Hatzileni Na Miyad Esav, it would have been enough. Even if he would have said Hatzileni no miyad ochi Esav, please save me from the hands of my brother Esav, it would have been enough. Why in heaven's name must he say Hatzileni no Kabenisham, please save me from the hands of my brother? If you're not sure who I mean, God, I mean Esav. His Tudat Zehut number is etc., etc., etc. I mean, so the fact is that the Zohar says that from here we learn that when you're praying for somebody, you have to be as specific as possible. If you're praying, you should know the name of the person, mother's name. You make a Mishaberach, you have to say a Mishaberach. Understand, from Esav you learn that a Mishaberach that you make for a Chola, it should be precise. But the Beis Halevi, the first Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, makes a profound, profound statement here, and this is an idea that we in part expressed last week in our Shir about Lavan. Yaakov is frightened of two things. He's frightened of the possibility that Esav may come as a brother and embrace him and show him kindness, make him an equal citizen. Let's live together in peace and harmony. He's afraid of his friendship. He's afraid of the kiss of Esav, because the kiss of Esav can be the kiss of death. And he is also, of course, afraid of the Esav, who is an Esav Arosha. He's afraid of concentration camps, and he's afraid of the open pluralistic society. He is afraid of the Amaleks and the Paros of history. And then he is also afraid of all those others who have embraced and welcomed the Jews into their communities, to the extent that we assimilated and we intermarried. Babel was a terrible experience. Paras was a terrible experience. America's, of course, unfortunately, America, and a lot of other countries in the world. England isn't any different than America, or Australia, or what are you talking about? What would? Very good. They were afraid in Mitzrayim of the perach, of the soft tones of talk. In other words, what Yaakov is saying over here, in light of our shiur last week, that Lavan represents the one who wants to cut off the roots of Yaakov. So he's afraid, save me from the hands. Lavan wants to be a friend. Come, let's live together. Similar cultures. We're friends. We're neighbors. We can cross-pollinize one another. We'll learn a little bit of Alehei Avram, a little bit of Alehei Nacha, one big mishmash. Yaakov is afraid of Lavan, and he's afraid of Paro. He's afraid of Esav if he comes against him as a brother, and he's afraid of Esav if he comes against him as Esav. And which one is he more frightened of? Hatzileni nami ad achi, save me from his brotherhood. Save me from an Esav who's going to come as a brother. Because that's what, that I won't be able to withstand. The Rambam writes this, in his letter to the Jews of Teman, on a pasuk in Yeshayahu. I'm trying to reconstruct it. Kol kli yutzar alayich lo yatzlach v'chol lashon tokum itach lamishpat tarshi. Now, that may be the pasuk, or I may have made it up, but I think it's pretty much. The pasuk says over there that Yeshayahu tells the Jewish people, God tells the Jewish people, any tongue that rises against you, or anyone who causes you harm, neither one of them is going to succeed. And the Rambam says that tongue represents the ones who are going to sweet talk you, the ones that are going to embrace you with that friendship. And then there are those who are going to cause you suffering and punishment. Neither one of them is going to succeed. This is all unplanned. The Ravra Soloveitchik, if I said Hatzileni no miyad ochi miyad Esav, is the Beis Halevi, the first Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. The Rav writes in one of his great essays, Uvo'u v'hoyo b'yom ahu, and it shall come to pass on that day, you talk up a shofar gadol, the great shofar is going to be sounded. Uvo'u ha'ovdim me eretz Ashur v'hanidachim v'eretz Mitzrayim. Those who are lost in the land of Ashur v'hanidachim, and those who have been cast away v'eretz Mitzrayim in the land of Egypt. Who are the ovdim and who are the nidachim? Who are the lost and who are the castaways? Says the Rav, the ovdim are eretz Ashur. The 10 tribes were taken into exile in Ashur. Ashur took them off, and really, this indeed was, forgive the term, resettlement in the east. what Ashur, Sanherib, king of Ashur, did, and Ashurbanipal, what they did was they resettled Jews in the east, and those were the 10 tribes who in a sense disappeared because they were assimilated into the dominant society. They were welcomed. They were welcomed with open arms. And they were assimilated and lost. They are the Ovdim. Uvo ha'Ovdim me'Eretz Ashur, and the Nidochim be'Eretz Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was concentration camps. They are Nidochim. They're not Ovdim. They're not lost. They're not lost. Ones who are lost are the ones who have lost their Jewish identity. In Eretz Ashur, they lost their identity. In Mitzrayim, they were Nidochim. They were cast aside. They suffered terribly. But they were never as bad off as the Jews of Ashur. And the great message of Yeshayahu is that when the shofar Gadol, the great shofar, is going to be sounded, God is going to bring back first, you know who needs it more desperately than anybody else? The Ovdim be'Eretz Ashur. The Rav describes America as the Ashur experience. Europe was the Mitzrayim experience. And that the Ashur experience, the Ashur America experience, is infinitely more dangerous for Klal Yisrael than the Mitzrayim experience. The American experience is the experience of Oved, lost. Arami Oved Avi. Arami Oved Avi, love unwanted, to have my father be lost by the dominant culture. And Nidochim be Eretz Mitzrayim. The same idea as Hatzileni No Miyad Achi Miyad Esav, my brother Esav. Right, that was an answer to your question. If I don't get to say the shir today, it'll be your fault. Hatzileni no miyad achi miyad Esav, please save me from the hand of my brother, from the hands of Esav, ki yorei onochi oto, because I'm afraid of him. Pen yavo v'hikani eim al banim. He knows his brother. He knows the absolute cruelty and evil of his brother. Mother and children, he'll kill them all. V'ato amato, you told me, heitei v'heitiv, imach, I will do good with you. V'samti et zaracha kechol ayam, asher lo yisafir mirov, and you promised that you're going to make my children like the, as many as the sand by the seashore that cannot be counted, because it is so many. And he stayed overnight at that place. And he took from that which he had mincha, a gift. He sends a gift to his brother Esav. And here's going to be a long description of the gift, precisely what he sends, how many camels, how many donkeys, how many oxen, what he sends, and he gives, and he presents the gift before him in such a way that, you know, little by little, there'll be first one gift, and then when you think it's all over, there on the horizon, there will be another camp coming with a gift. He's going to overwhelm Esav with gifts. And he tells them in Pasuk Yutet 19, for Amarta la'avdecha li'Yakov, you should say, li'avdecha li'Yakov mincha yishlucha, to your servant Yaakov, this is a gift that is being sent, la'adoni le'Esav, to my master Esav, v'hine gam hu acharenu, he's coming after it. And he makes sure that each group is going to make it clear. 7-8 times he says, your servant Yaakov, my master Esav. All right, so let's begin our assessment of the assessment of Chazal. Let's take this page. Next time, I'm first learning how to do this, you know. So I will in Mirz Hashem number the pages. We'll even print on it Jerusalem College for Adults. I'll even number them. All right. Malka has said that, and I believe that Ramban at some point says, and all the Mefarshim really talk about it, that Yaakov must prepare himself for war. You can't simply walk off and say, listen, I got a promise from the Rebbeinu Shem, and I have, therefore, there is nothing that I have to do. And by the way, before I start going through this sheet, I had sort of asked that Yaakov does not prepare himself in the way in which Rashi had... Rashi said that that he prepares himself l'doron for a gift, l'tfila, prayer, u'melchama, and war, but that's not the order. He prepares himself for war. Malkit, this is the answer to your question. Watch. He prepares himself for war, then he prays, and then he sends the gift. You know why he prepares himself for war before he prays? Because if he's going to pray and then prepare himself for war, you know the mistaken impression? In other words, listen, first of all, I'll say a kapitel tilim. If a kapitel tilim doesn't help, then I have my army here. That's not how it works. It works precisely the opposite. I prepare myself for war. I do what I have to do. The Rebbeishim is only going to help the person who is doing what it is his responsibility to do. The first thing he has to do is prepare himself for war. Then he can turn to the Rebbeishim and say, listen, Rebbeishim, I have tried everything, nearly everything that I can do. And now I'm telling you, despite the fact that I have a massive army here poised against Esav, I know that the ultimate decision on the field of battle is going to be yours. Then prayer is meaningful and significant, that despite the fact that I'm ready for war, I know you're the one that dictates how the battle is going to end. And only after he has prepared himself for war and he prays does he send the gift. Maybe he should have sent the gift first. Isn't that the way Rashi said it? Doron first. But there's a big difference between one who is ready for war and sends a gift and one who's not ready for war and sends a gift. The one who's not ready for war and sends a gift is really sending a plea of appeasement. Please take this and leave me be. And you know what he hopes for? The one who receives that kind of gift knows, not only can I have your gift, I can have you. But when one who is ready for war, powerful, and then he sends a gift, there can be no mistake about that gift. That gift is a genuine hand that is extended for peace. That's what it means. Because if you're, don't think that I'm afraid of you, don't think that I'm not ready to do battle with you. I am ready to do battle with you. But listen, why the loss of life if we will be able to resolve this problem in other ways? Then the gift is not appeasement. Then the gift really is the genuine hand of peace that is extended. But meanwhile, let's see Chazal. The shir has to start sometime, and there's no better than the present. This sheet over here. I found it in a Sefer Bajer where he did all my work for me. He listed the Mefarshim and the Medrashim on both sides. In a sense, do you know how it can be described? As Chazal say with regard to Noach, Yesh Dorshim L'Shvach V'Yesh Dorshim L'Gnai. There are those who see Noach in a negative light, and there are those who see him in a positive light. There are those who see Yaakov and condemn him, and those who see Yaakov and commend him. The top, let's begin with the Midrashim. This is a Midrash, and it's a Gemara in a few places. Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Amalo L'Rav Apos. Rabbeinu HaKadosh is Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the author of the Mishnah. Now you may recall back in Parashat Toldot that we had quoted earlier. In the Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'eva, they tell Rivka that there are two nations, two mighty nations in your womb. Shnei Goyim Bivitnei, two nations in your womb. Goyim there is spelt in a very strange way, and the Gemara says on this, and Rashi brings it, Shnei Geim, two proud and mighty people. And Rashi says, who does this represent? Antoninus Verebi. Mark Anthony and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, because there was a relationship of friendship between the two. They are the two great proud ones who represented a brief interval of peace between Yaakov and Esau. So Rabbeinu HaKadosh Amar Lo L'Rav Appas, Rabbeinu HaKadosh said to Rav Appas, who was his scribe, his secretary, Ketovi Gedev Achab Bishmi LaMelech Antoninus, send a letter in my name to King Antoninus. Come the Kosav. So Rav Appas wrote, Mi Yehuda Nesia, from Yehuda the Nasi, the president of the Jewish people, Lemoron Malka Antoninus to King Antoninus. Lokach Rabbeinu HaKadosh to Yigeret, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was called Rabbeinu HaKadosh. He took the letter, he read it, and he tore it up, the Koha. And he tore it up, the Chosav, and he wrote, Lemoron Malka Antoninus, Mi Yehuda Avdecha. How had Rav Appas written it? From Yehuda the president to Antoninus the Caesar. No. He turns it over to Caesar Antoninus Anthony from Yehuda, not Yehuda Nisia, not Yehuda the president, but from your servant Yehuda. Amalo Rav Appas. So Rav Appas said, Why do you treat your own honor so lightly? How do you shame and embarrass yourself? What are you talking about? Before that guy over there, you call yourself Yehuda Avdecha. I can imagine Rav Appas getting very excited and passionate about this. Amalo, so Rabbi Yehuda Nasi said to him, Hayim tov ani mi zekeni? Zekeni, am I better than my Zayde Yaakov? Yaakov was able to send to Esav and refer to himself as Avdecha. I can do it before Antoninus. So here, quite clear, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is taking his cue from Yaakov. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, another medrash. Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Yaakov, Asita HaKodesh Chol. You're Kodesh. You're holy and you've turned yourself into Chol. You've profaned yourself. Amalafon of Yaakov said before God, Rebbeinu Shalelam, Ani machnif la rosha bishvil shelo yahargeni. I'm flattering this rosha so that he shouldn't kill me. Mikan amru chachamim. From here the chachamim said, Machnifinet harishoyim ba'olam hazeh, b'pnei darkei shalom. You have the right to flatter a rosha in this world, b'pnei darkei shalom, if it's a means of keeping the peace, then you do it. Then you do it. Don't you understand? I don't know. I have a different way of looking at it. When you really feel that you are superior to somebody else, you can deign to humble yourself. If you really think you're humble, it's impossible to humble yourself, or it's very difficult. In other words, but when you really know your true worth, and you know what that fellow is, this is a Rosha Merusha. He is evil incarnate. I know what I am, and I know what he is. It's not difficult to... I can imagine, you don't see it on Yaakov's face, but I can imagine the smirk, you shtick Rosha over there. So says your servant Yaakov. You know, if you really think that you're low, then you know what? You're going to have difficulty lowering yourself to somebody else. But if you really have absolutely no respect for the other person, it's nothing more than a show. If anything, you can laugh inside as you're saying it. It's only when you really think that you're not as good as the other person, that you find it very, very difficult to humble yourself. We're going to list Medroshim and Mamore Chazal, who commend and those who condemn. What you're going to have to be able to do is see the truth in both. To simply close your mind completely to one side of the coin because you feel inclined to the other side is not the way to approach a Pasuk in Torah. You have to be able to see both sides, difficult as it may be. I'm not saying that you have to agree or disagree, but you have to be able to see both sides of the question. And then ultimately, we're going to be left with the question, so what do we learn from this parasha? But just, you know what? You know what I have to say to you? Savlanut. Savlanut. Maaseh Avod. Yes, we're going to have to talk about that. Maaseh Avod Siman Labanim. That which was done by the fathers is an indication to the children how they have to conduct themselves. The question, of course, is, what are we supposed to learn from Yaakov? Vayitzav otam leimor gimel. He commanded the messengers, so saying, ledorot. He commanded them for all generations. No, I said bet. Gimel in the first. Vayitzav otam leimor. He commanded them, saying, ledorot, for all generations. Shelo yitkashu keneged hagal. You shouldn't harden yourself before the wave, because if the wave is going to come against somebody who is incapable of bending or incapable of being flexible, you're going to be wiped away. You have to know that there are moments at which it is necessary, you know what, to bend, bow, scrape for a while, so that there will be another day. It isn't always the smartest thing to stand up there and be defiant. Until death we be defiant. Defiant time, defiant bargain. It's better alive. Whoever holds himself strong against the wave, hagal shotfo, the wave washes him away. And whoever is able to bend before the wave, Hagal Ovro, the wave passes him over, and then ultimately he's able to stand up. You know what it reminded me of?
Flexibility.
Gemishut, flexibility. What it reminded me of is, I mean, just as I came, I remember the morning of the Gulf War. Remember? Remember the Gulf War? So I had a woman who lives on the block in my congregation, all frightened, calls me up and says, Rabbi, I need a pasuk to keep me going. I mean, everybody was all frightened. We had already gone into our sealed rooms. And so I don't know, the Rebbeinu Shem sometimes, occasionally, the Rebbeinu Shem just gives you the pasuk. So I told her a pasuk, but an hour later, I already had 10 calls. Rabbi, did you hear this great pasuk? I loved it. A pasuk in Yeshayahu. Leich ami bo b'chadorecha. Go, my people, come into your rooms. Uskor dolosecha ba'adecha. And close the door behind you. Chavi kim'at rega. Wait for a moment. Ad yavor zam. Until the anger will pass. Huh? It's in Yeshayahu chapter 26, pasuk 20. And then, of course, the next pasuk is also terrific, but this was the best pasuk. And I just told her, take it easy. Go into your rooms, close it. Yeshayahu exactly knew exactly when he saw it 2,500 years ago. He knew exactly, he saw precisely our situation. Just wait until the anger passes. No point in walking out defiantly. Mushege, take it easy. Because the next pasuk says, Ki hine Hashem yotzei mimekomo, because God is coming out of his place. Lifkod avon yoshev haaretz olav. He is going to punish the sinners. He will not cover up anymore, permit covering up the blood of Jews. He's going to protect the Jewish people. Okay, so that was the pasuk. So was it necessary to be defiant, or did the Navi say, you know, sometimes, behaltzach, go into your room, close the door behind you, hide for a while, ad yavor zam, until the anger will pass. All right. Dalit, L'shnei machanot. I better get my... okay, we better move. L'shnei machanot. Tov erech ruach. I think this may express what I was saying before. A pasuk in Mishlei, Tov erech ruach, it's better the one who is able to sort of hold back anger, long to get angry. It's not always great to, you know, let it all hang out, you know, come out with everything. Better to, just overcome the need to express your anger. Sheherich apo v'lo dochak et hashoh u'barach lo l'choron. You know, Yaakov could have remained in Beersheba. His mother tells him that Esav wants to kill him. He could have stayed in Beersheba and said, "You kid me? I'm going to run from Beersheba before my brother Esav. What are you talking about? Absolutely not. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to stand my ground." Says the Medrash. You know, sometimes it's better to disappear from the scene. It's good that he went to Choron. Ad Yavor Zam. He ran, he fled off to the house of Lavan. And by the way, I can imagine a child telling parent, "What are you talking about? You want me to run from before my brother Esav? You want me to act like a coward? You want me to do something like that? Not me. Not on your life. If he wants to fight, let him fight." Nah. He was able to, he was Mekayim, Kibud, Avein. He listened to his father and his mother. Zan Geven Gerecht. How do you like that? Sometimes, I've said this in the past, sometimes parents are right. He went off. Tov Erech Ruach, the Medrash goes on to say, good is Erech Ruach, the one who is able to withhold his anger. Shalom is gotta be Esav, that he didn't start up with Esav. Eleherech apo ubolo derech shiflis. Better that he came before Esav in this obsequious and lowly manner. Yeah, let him go. Let him go. The Sephorno. And Vahoda, do you know what we learn from this parasha? He says, we should flee from before the sword of his pride, by subduing ourselves and by sending gifts. As our rabbi said, Achia from Shiloh was the prophet who told Yerovam ben Nevat that he's going to be the king of the 10 tribes. And then when Yerovam ben Nevat turns against God, so he curses him. And in the curse, it's in Malachim Aleph, Perek 14, he says, V'hikar Hashem et Yisrael, God is going to smite Israel, kasher yonud hakoneh b'mayim, like a reed, moves in the waters. So he says, the Sephorno says, the klala, the curse of Achia Hashiloni, was a blessing in disguise, because the kona, which is the sort of the reed that's in the water, has deep roots, but when the wind comes, it bends. But what happens when the wind passes? It goes straight back to the middle. What about the cedar tree? The cedar tree, when a strong wind strikes it, what happens? Breaks. So he says you have to be able to be, what is it? Elastic? Flexible? I don't know. We have a roof garden. When the winds came on Sukkah, so it tore apart the Sukkah. But the garden just went back again. So it is. So he says, the Sephorno brings a raya from Achia Shiloni. Kilei le Yisrael b'kona. He cursed Klal Yisrael b'kona hanichna l'chol aruchos. A kona a reed that bows before all winds. And here he brings a historic, something historic. And I will have to explain this to you, because some of you may even remember something I said about this some months or years ago. Haim, lo osu kein varione vayit sheni, lo hoyo necher avet migdoshenu, kimo sheheyed Rebbe Yochanan ben Zakkai. Would the zealots, I don't like that word, but all right, I'm going to use that word. Would the zealots at the end of the second Bet HaMikdash have conducted themselves that way, instead of going out in open rebellion against Rome, which was hopeless? There was no way that a Jewish people that were divided from within would be able to withstand the might, the superior might of Rome. If the zealots would not have gone out and rebelled, the Beis HaMikdash would not have been destroyed. As Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai testifies, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was the great Talmud Chacham, the Gadol b'Yisrael of the time.
Mishitzil
et kolam Yisrael. But more than that. Because I remember I once... I was the one, I gave a shiur. I think I repeated the shiur about half a year ago. I think I'm going to have to put that on, get that produced on tape, where... I took issue with a former leader of Medinat Yisrael, Olav HaShalom, who said that the zealots destroyed the second Bet HaMikdash. The zealots. And of course, he extended that to include, it was obvious that it included anybody who was to the right of him, more than half the country. The zealots destroyed the second Bet HaMikdash. By the way, that's exactly what the Seferno is saying. And I took issue with it. So just give me a few minutes and I'll give you the other side of the story. There is another side to the coin. Let's see the second half, at least. Let's finish this page. Mayon Nirpash, these are the ones who condemn Yaakov. Mayon Nirpash u'mekor mashchat tzadik mot lifnei rosha. Aleph in the second part of the page. Mayan Nirpash means a spring of water that has dirt in it, umekor mashchat, something where there's a source of water that is destroyed. That is tzaddik mat lifnei rasha, a tzaddik who bends before the before a rasha. Kishen shi efsha lemayon lehirapesh, just like a spring can never be dirty, because the water is always flowing and it's always cleaning itself out, May Aden, it's always cleaning itself out. Kachi efshel tzadik lamot lifnei rasha, tzadik can never fall before a rasha. Ukemayon nirpash uchavod mashchas kach tzadik shememit atzmo lifnei rasha. A tzadik who bends and bows before a rasha, he's dirtying the waters. Condemnation of Yaakov. The next pasuk is even better. Machazik baznei kelev mitaber al riv lo lo. Shlomo HaMelech Mishlei says, somebody goes up, there's a sleeping dog. We know what you're supposed to do with sleeping dogs. Let sleeping dogs lie. Machazik baznei kelev, somebody goes over, there's a sleeping dog and he gives him a pinch on the ear. God, what a stupid thing that is. Shlomo HaMelech Mishlei compares that to Misaber al Riv Lolo, a person who gets himself involved in a machlokes that's not his business. Stay out of it. What are you getting involved in something that you'll never kriech out of it? Says the Medrash on this pasuk, Rav Nachman bar Shmuel, Omar Rav Nachman, the name of Shmuel, said, Moshel l'listim shiyoshim baderech. It's a moshel of a highwayman, a robber, who's sleeping on the road. Somebody came by and started waking him up. Amalo, kum lechon, wake up! There's danger over here. Come, veheichel mekaperbo. You know what the highwayman did? He got up and he robbed this guy who woke him up. Amalei, yiga Hashem bechom meishiv ro'at achastovah. So the fellow who's being robbed says, "Let God repay you." I'm doing you a taiva, and you're repaying me with evil. Amalo, Yashain Haya, Va'ata Orarto. He was sleeping. What did you wake him up for? Kach Amalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeYaakov, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Yaakov, L'darko Haya Mahalech, Va'yito Mishaleach Etzlo. Esav was traveling down in Seir, in Edom, all the way in the south, on the other side of the Jordan. Esav is not in Yaakov's path. Yaakov sends messengers out of his path to Esav to telling him, hey, I'm coming home. What did you have to tell him? Go home and finish. Let the sleeping dog lie. What did you do it for? Oh, you send messengers to him saying, I'm coming home. Then Esav all of a sudden wakes up and he starts coming out toward him with 400 men. Vayishlach, the Ruach HaKodesh omeret. On the word Vayishlach, you know how Ruach HaKodesh read that word? Vay, oy, vay. Yaakov mishaleach el Esav. Yaakov is sending messages to Esav. Vay, ay, 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 Yishlach, what are you doing? Ladoni le'esav, to my master Esav. Bo'o shosho shekoro Yaakov le'esav Adoni at that time. When Yaakov called Esav, my master, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, Ata hishpalta et atzmucha, you cast yourself down before him, the karasa la'esav Adoni, shmone pa'amim, you called him Adoni 8 times, chayech, I swear, ani mamid mibonav shmone malachim kodim l'menecha, there are going to be 8 kings in Esav before there will be a king in Israel. And they're going to be listed at the end of Parshat Vayishlach. Vayishtachu arzo sheva pamin, and he bowed before him 7 times. Ukinegdam natal mimenu shiva, because Yaakov bowed down 7 times before Esav. Esav took from him 7 things. The Ohel Moed, Gilgal, Shiloh, Nov, Givon, Bayit Rishon, Ubayit Sheni. Wow. Okay, all right. Okay, so there. Tov erech ruach. I'm not going to respond. I'm going to withhold my comment. Yes. Umordechai lo yichre v'lo yishtacheve. This I like. This medrash. And Mordechai will not bow nor bend before Haman. Amru lo. They said to him, why don't you act like Yaakov? We found that Yaakov bowed 7 times. Why don't you bow before Haman? What an answer! Amar lehem, Binyamin a'avi b'mei imo haya v'lo hishtachave v'ani ben b'no. My Zayde Binyamin had not yet been born. He was in the womb of his mother. Binyamin is going to be born in this sefer later on. The only one who didn't bow before Esav was Binyamin. I'm an enikel of Binyamin. Binyamin didn't bow before Esav. I don't bow before Esav. The Ramban. That's a beauty. Now comes the Ramban. And this Ramban is the one, this is only one sentence of a Ramban that I had learned with you a number of months ago when we talked about who destroyed Bayit Sheni, who destroyed the second Bet HaMikdash. Says the Ramban, Ukvar Tofsuhu Chachamim Al Zeh. On the next page I have the entire Ramban. I don't know if we'll have a chance to get to it, but gosh, all right. Ukvar Tofsu, let's page one, the one we're on. Ukvar Tofsu Chachamim Al Zeh. The Chachamim already, they condemned him for this. Va'aldati. The Ramban is the one who says that everything that we learn about Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov is an indication of what's going to happen in the future. So he says, Va'aldati Yirmoz. This comes to hint to the fact. Ki anachnu hitchalnu nifilateinu bidei Edom. We're the ones who began. We were guilty of the fall into the hands of Edom. Ki malchei bayit sheni bau v'britim haramiyim, because the kings of the second Beth HaMikdash came, made a treaty with Rome. We brought Rome into Eretz Yisrael. What the Ramban is talking about is an event that happened some 70, 80 years before the Churban HaBayit. I'll tell you exactly the story. There was a period, the 10 best years that Klal Yisrael had during the Second Commonwealth, during Bayit Sheni, were the 10 years after Yanai HaMelech died, and for 10 years there was a queen, Shlom Tzion HaMalka. Shlom Tzion HaMalka, 10 years of really the best 10 years that Klal Yisrael had during Bayit Sheni. She ruled as queen, and her great advisor was her brother, who was a block over, Shimon ben Shattach. Right? You got all the streets over there? Okay? Do you know who came between Shlom Tzion HaMalka and her brother Shimon ben Shattach? Yanai. Right. That's the little street. That's the little street at the bottom over there. All right. Shlom Tzion HaMalka had two sons, Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. Hyrcanus was the older, Aristobulus was the younger. Hyrcanus was the one whom she appointed, of course, to be king. He was also Kohen Gadol, but Hyrcanus was a quiet, reserved. Aristobulus was a passionate, strong individual. And what really broke out was, now this is how the kingdom of the Hashmonaim came to a disastrous end. There was civil war between Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. I'm not going to go into all of the details of that ugly, ugly civil war, but everybody started bringing in people on their side, and ultimately they went to Rome, to Pompey of Rome, that he should decide between the two. And he saw this as a means of Rome getting a foothold in Eretz Yisrael. He planned it was all planned. And he was going to, he came out on the side of Aristobulus against Hyrcanus. Meanwhile, there were Antipater, Idumeans, who are on other sides. The fact is, we invited Rome into Eretz Yisrael. This was, the Ramban is talking about an event that is 80, maybe 100 years before the event of the Sephardo. So the Sephardo is taking as an example the fact that when Eretz Yisrael was already lost, the final stroke was the Zealots. And if the Zealots would not have rebelled against Rome, so we would have survived another 10 years. But the Ramban is looking at the facts of history. We brought them into Eretz. We gave them Ishtig Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, the Ramban is basically saying that, you know, we have to know in our relationship with the nations of the world not to give them any drisas ha'regel. We should not give them the opportunity to hand them a state within a state. Ultimately, Rome swallowed up Eretz Yisrael. So the point that I had made is, it's not completely fair, not only not completely fair, it's not historically true to say that the Zealots destroyed the Second Temple, which were the words of the Sephardim. Would we not have invited Rome in ourselves? It would never have come to that point. We started our fall into the hands of Edom because it was a disastrous treaty that was entered into in Rome, and it was clear what Rome wanted. The only thing is, the two parts of Klal Yisrael were so torn apart with hatred for one another that they could not see what they were, they couldn't see what they were doing. I got to do something from the let's go to the next page. I'm not sure yet that I'll do anything on the next page. The question, of course, is
we now have these two opinions. What are we supposed to do with the two opinions? In other words, if we would be faced with that kind of a situation, what are we to do? Are we to use Yaakov Avinu as an example, or are we to condemn him? The Zohar, fascinatingly enough, says those who commend and those who condemn, Elu ve'elu, Divrei Elokim Chaim, both are right. The Zohar speaks on in his understanding, in our understanding of Torah. In Torah, there's Pshat. Then beyond Pshat, there's Remez and Sod and Drush. While certain forms of action may be seem negative in the area of Pshat, but there is something that happens beneath the surface. Ultimately, the real truth of what I believe is really the answer to the do we condemn or do we commend? The fact is that Yaakov gave the answer. Yaakov gave the answer himself. By virtue of the fact that Yaakov prepared himself, Ledoron, Letvila, Ulamilchama, Yaakov is already giving us, he's giving us the formula to be used in all of history. For example, what happens if we're incapable of preparing ourselves for Mulkama? We're incapable of waging war. We're standing before an enemy that is simply more powerful than anything we can ever muster. Is there any thought of going to war? Of course there's no thought of going to war. There can't be any thought of going to war. What Yaakov Avinu is saying is, if you are capable, if you have the wherewithal and the means to go to war, prepare for war. But prepare for war doesn't mean that I have to go to war. What Yaakov Avinu really is doing is, I will use the classic Hebrew expression, Hu mashir et kol ha'optziot pituchot. He leaves. Huh, ma? Harotzev shalom yikon la milchama. Whoever wants peace should prepare for war. Very good. Yaakov Avinu keeps all of his options open. He is ready to go to war. But because you're ready to go to war and you're capable of going to war, does it mean you have to go to war? No. On the contrary, as I said earlier, it's because he's capable of going to war that he doesn't mind saying Adoni Esav Avdecha Yaakov Ebeshme, because you know what you know what's going on in Yaakov Avinu's mind? You just take one wrong step, Esav, and I'll show you exactly what an Eved I am and what an Adon you are. It's possible for one to seemingly humble oneself when one isn't really that humble. When one is really humble, you know what? They're not humble. They're frightened out of their wits. Yaakov Avinu is capable of saying Adoni and calling Esav Adoni and calling himself Avdi only because he knows that it's no more than a game of words. Because Esav knows quite well that Yaakov is ready to fight. And therefore, do you know what? They would say, how would they say it over here? Do you know what Yaakov has really given Esav over here? He has given him the means of climbing down from, what do they say? Climbing down from the tree, or getting off his high horse, or a means of saving face. Because here, Esav is coming out toward him with 400 men armed to the teeth on a war footing. He's really riding hard for the attack. He takes a look at Yaakov's camp, and as Vedem dark before the eyes, as Vedem finsta for the eichen. But all of a sudden he sees that he's not coming, his only contact, and you know what Esav's mistake was? He didn't send the Mossad out to check out what's happening in the field. Esav does not become aware of what Yaakov is until he comes face to face
with Yaakov, and then all of a sudden he sees that this Yaakov, all of his talk about Adoni and Avdi, this is no more than talk. It means if you can use words in place of swords and bullets, use it. But the only time you can do that is if you're ready for war. If you're not ready for war, then you are helpless before the enemy. In a sense, that's really what he's going to learn in that great nocturnal struggle. There's going to be the struggle with the Malach during the course of the night. Oh, is that something to study at? Of course, we won't be able to go into it. But the what Yaakov has taught us in this parasha, according to the Ramban, and the fact is, according to Muslim Mepharshim, is the survival mechanism of Klal Yisrael throughout history. There are moments at which you're going to have to be like the reed. You're going to have to be able to bend before the tide. There are times at which you're going to have to go into your rooms and hide and wait until the anger will pass. There are times at which you're going to have to stand up and stand strong. But the basic survival mechanism of Klal Yisrael is learned in this parasha. That's what Yaakov is all about. And therefore, let me at least close on the second page. I can't do all of the Medrashim, so read a paragraph from Mark Twain. The Jew has made a marvelous fight in this world in all the ages, and has done it with his hands tied behind him. The Egyptian, the Babylonian, and the Persian rose, filled the planet with sound and splendor, then faded to dream stuff and passed away. The Greek and the Roman followed and made a vast noise, and they are gone. Other peoples have sprung up and held their torch high for a time, but it burned out, and they sit in twilight now or have vanished. The Jews saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was, exhibiting no decadence, no infirmities of age, no weakening of his parts, no slowing of his energies, no dulling of his alert and aggressive mind.